Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, August 19th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Victim's family giving $20,000 in rewards for help with case from Urbana. In addition to helping start a fund in their daughter's honor, Ying Ying Zhang's family is giving $20,000 to the people who provided information that helped lead to her murderer's arrest and conviction. Now that the trial is complete, rewards of $20,000 are being made to those who provided information that led to the arrest and conviction of the person who kidnapped Ying Ying, states an update on the GoFundMe page. The campaign raised over $161,000 for more than 3,500 people since Ms. Zhang went missing 2 summers ago. Her family's attorney, Steve Beckett, declined to say who exactly will be receiving the reward money. At the trial in June, where Brent Christensen was convicted of kidnapping and killing Ms. Zhang in June 2017 and sentenced to life in prison, his ex-girlfriend was a star witness for the prosecution. Tara Bullis testified about wearing a wire for the FBI. In recorded conversations over several days, Christensen eventually opened up to Bullis, and after attending a campus vigil for Ms. Zhang, he told her in gruesome detail how he said he killed the visiting Chinese scholar. A day later, he was arrested. Emily Hogan also provided valuable information to authorities and key testimony during the trial, telling her story of being approached by Christensen the same day he kidnapped Ms. Zhang. She refused to get in his car, called police, and later identified him in a photo lineup. After the trial, Beckett and Zidong Wang, another attorney for Ms. Zhang's family, praised Bullis and Hogan. Ying Ying's family owes a debt of gratitude to both of these brave young women, they said in June. Tara's courage is self-evident, and the assistance she gave to law enforcement was invaluable. And Emily's willingness to come forward and testify about the defendant's conduct toward her was also a key part of the case. After sentencing in July, U.S. District Judge Jim Shadid also praised them as two of the many heroes who helped catch and convict Christensen. He said Bullis showed more courage than the defendant could ever muster to help law enforcement bring him to this day of judgment and spoiling the defendant's goal of getting away with murder. After Ms. Zhang's went missing, Champaign County Crime Stoppers announced a reward of up to $40,000. It was later increased to $50,000, the largest in the organization's 33-year history. The reward money was raised through the GoFundMe account, said John Hecker, president of the local Crime Stoppers, which served as a conduit and helped publicize the reward. We were pleased to try to be responsive to their needs, but as far as accounts and amounts and who's going to get paid, that's their decision entirely and rightly so. It's their money and they should be making that decision. The GoFundMe funds will also be used to help pay for the family's final U.S. expenses, according to the campaign update, and $30,000 will be used as the lead gift of Ying Ying's fund, an endowment through the University of Illinois Foundation being announced today. The endowment will help support international students in crisis and their families. The fund shall provide support for international UIUC students who experience emergencies or other situations where they are in urgent need of access to funds to address the urgent situation and ideally continue their education. It may also be used to support familial travel expenses, which may include but are not limited to airfare, lodging, and meals for the student's immediate family. The fund is formally being announced this morning at a press conference at the Illini Union, where Ms. Zhang's father will speak and a message will be read from her boyfriend whom she had planned to marry. In addition to the $30,000 gift from her family, more than 450 people have donated over $25,000 to the fund since it was announced earlier this month. Uncanny Staff lands yet another rocket at Hugo's from Urbana. An Urbana-based magazine was honored Sunday with a Hugo Award, considered the Pulitzers of science fiction and fantasy literature. At a ceremony in Dublin, Ireland, Uncanny Magazine was named Best Semi-Prozine, Semi-Professional Magazine for the fourth straight year. "We were absolutely thrilled," co-editor Lynn Thomas said. It was the eighth Lifetime Hugo for the head of the University of Illinois Rare Book and Manuscript Library, and the fifth for her husband and uncanny co-editor Michael Damian Thomas. Winners are chosen each year by members of the World Science Fiction Convention. Uncanny, now in its sixth year, is relatively new to the world of science fiction publishing. The Thomases expect to receive their prize, a statuette featuring a big chrome rocket, in the near future. Also from Urbana, mission on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Green Beret Tracy Harper worked in intelligence on a trail that Viet Cong and North Vietnamese regulars used as a highway for supplying their troops. The staff sergeant has little time to tell his story because he has cancer, and he said he doesn't expect to live much longer. Now 69, he hopes to make it to 70 in a few weeks. "That's my goal," he said. "I've lived a full life. To get this far is pretty good." Harper doesn't like to talk much about his war experiences. He would rather talk about pool. He once bought a $4,000 cue stick and the trophies he's won, so many that some had to go into storage. Jupiter's downtown was his favorite haunt. Harper also has a room dedicated to Al Capone memorabilia. But the Urbana native, who spent parts of 1969 and 1970 in Vietnam and Cambodia on the Ho Chi Minh Trail and Special Forces, has vivid memories. He enlisted at a storefront in what was then called Five Points in Urbana, and he later spent a decade in the Army National Guard. But in 1969 was near the height of the war. After Fort Leonard Wood, he had to take a jump test at Fort Benning, the first requirement for becoming a Green Beret. Harper took further tests and joined the group. "We trained under physical and mental stress. We would go on missions they said couldn't be done. We thought we could. As a Green Beret, he was qualified for a dangerous duty. I volunteered for the Studies and Observation Group. It was an elite group so secret that the government denied it even existed. Among its missions, according to recently declassified papers, the all-volunteered SOG soldiers made parachute jumps behind enemy lines and carried out reconnaissance missions along the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos and Cambodia. They also attempted several POW rescues. Harper was on the Ho Chi Minh Trail several times. The work was mostly intel, but I was basically a sniper. We would go out in 4 or 5-man groups to watch the Viet Cong and NVA. We paid a lot of attention. That included filming the enemy trucks. Harper was useful in his group. I was a good map reader. It was something, if something happened, I could find a way for us to get out." Harper said SOG troops put their minds to a lot of dirty tricks on the Cong. "The most memorable? We bent the firing pins on some M16 rifles and made sure they were going to get them. We gave them line units and told them to make sure 2 cases of brand new M16s got left behind so the Cong could use them in an ambush. We didn't get to see the results, and it isn't sure whether the M16s jammed or exploded. I'm sure they really did some damage." He said he didn't feel like a hero, but he did drag some wounded buddies to safety during a firefight. After his year in Vietnam and his discharge, upon his return to the United States, he was definitely not treated as a hero. "That includes being spit on when I was in uniform at an airport. I decked him. I put him down on the ground." He acknowledges it was the war that was unpopular, but individuals took the brunt of the reaction rather than the government. "They despised what I had done." He was offered more stripes and a higher pay grade in the Guard, but he decided he liked his day job better. After decades as a mailman, Harper retired in 2002 and spent some time in his Florida house. He has also joined veterans groups here and in Florida. "I don't think anybody owes me anything but respect." And from Macon, Georgia, Dwayne Allman's guitar sells for $1.25 million. Fans of Dwayne Allman in Macon, Georgia, say they didn't expect the late musician's old guitar to sell for $1.25 million at a recent auction. The gold-topped guitar is the one Allman played in the hit song Layla, where he performed with Eric Clapton. Until recently, the guitar, affectionately called Layla, had been on display at the Allman Brothers Band Museum at the Big House in Macon. I don't think anybody expected that, Museum Director Richard Brent said of the amount. The history of it is what sold it. Brent said the man who bought the guitar at the auction is an out-of-town collector who wishes to remain anonymous. The buyer has agreed to share the instrument with the museum during certain times. That means it will be coming back to the museum in late November. It will be coming back to the big house in late November. We couldn't ask for more than that. Duane Allman played the guitar on the first two Allman Brothers records and in Loan Me a Dime with Boss Gags. The recording Layla with Derek and the Dominoes is among the last times Allman played that guitar. Also on the front page, slumping sales could get boost with beer. Administrators hoping strong home slate late buyers provide push from Champaign. Beer will be flowing. A new patio is ready for students, and the Illini home schedule features three top Big Ten opponents. Whether it will reverse a two-year slide in football attendance remains to be seen, with season ticket sales down slightly from last year at this point. It's still early, since Jason Hegeminer, Associate Athletic Director for Ticketing and Sales, who calls Illini fans a notoriously late-buying audience. In terms of numbers, we're not seeing a sharp increase. We are hopeful, and we are waiting for that to happen. He hopes fans will flock to see Nebraska, Michigan, and Wisconsin play at Memorial Stadium in September and October. People are excited about the schedule. They're pretty marquee games, Hegemeyer said, as Michigan hasn't visited Champaign since 2011. Those do seem to be the games that people are most interested in. Beer sales, which will be allowed for the first time in general seating, have been received positively, but were designed to improve fan enjoyment at games, not necessarily be a decider on whether people come. I wouldn't necessarily say you can see that in ticket sales. Hegemeyer declined to release sales numbers for individual games, but is expecting a crowd of 30,000 to 35,000 for the August 31st home opener against Akron. About 22,000 season tickets have been sold so far, down about 1,000 from last year. But this is the time when sales typically pick up, as training camp and the new semester get underway, and people turn their attention from summer to fall and football. We definitely have seen things start to progress, said Cassie Arner, Associate AD for Marketing and Fan Development. Sales of iFund 4-packs, four season tickets in the East Balcony and a parking pass for $350, an affordable option for families, have sold really well. As of last Wednesday, fewer than 100 of the 600 offered were still available, topping last year's sales, and Arner is hopeful they'll sell out. The packs have been sold in the past but weren't targeted in advertising. A digital and social media marketing push is planned for the next 2 weeks. That's just one tool the DIA is using to spur fan interest after seven consecutive losing seasons. Average home attendance jumped by about 3,000 in 2016 during Lovie Smith's first season as head coach to 45,644. That year also saw the last Illini sellout against North Carolina when Illinois lost 48-23. Stadium capacity is 60,000. But in 2017, the average fell below 40,000 for the first time in decades to 39,000, the lowest since 1970. And last season, the six games at Memorial Stadium drew an average of 36,151 fans, the fewest since 1962. Factor in the 21,000 fans who took in the South Florida game at Soldier Field, and the average dropped to 34,000, the worst since 1945. A winning team would obviously be the biggest driver of ticket sales, but the DIA is exploring other ways to lure fans and improve the game day experience, in part to compete with the availability of live sports on streaming devices or high-definition TV. Every athletic department is starting to think about football games and basketball games much differently than we would 10 or 15 years ago, said Arner, who worked at Auburn and the University of Houston in between stints at Illinois. We do think about it as the whole event, from the minute you leave your house, the traffic, parking, what kinds of activities we can provide outside of the game that make memories, what kinds of things we can do inside the game to make it exciting and create a better atmosphere. The DIA recently surveyed fans, those who go to games and those who don't, to get a sense of what we need to prioritize in terms of facilities and capital improvements, as well as amenities. Fans were asked to rank priorities for what DIA should invest in and what would make them buy a ticket. On the facilities side, there were lots of answers, with renovations to the south and east sides of the stadium a top pick. As for amenities, the priorities were clear: beer sales, which were already under consideration, free parking, and shuttles, in that order. Beer will be sold this fall at separate kiosks in the east and west main halls to keep lines manageable, and at regular concession stands in the horseshoe area where there isn't room for separate stands. In the north end zone where students sit, one of the four concession stands will be devoted to beer sales. Marty Kaufman, Senior Associate AD for External Relations, expects beer sales will prompt more people who have tickets to use them rather than just tailgating outside. It will pay dividends over the long term if the team is more successful and the environment inside the stadium is good. Arner thinks it will also help with fan retention, the people who come into a game and then leave at halftime to go back out to the tailgate. Another addition is a new student patio deck in the northeast corner of the stadium, featuring concessions, high-top tables with umbrellas, outdoor couches and chairs, and TVs tuned to other college games. It's being developed just outside where the coaches' offices were located before moving to the new practice facility east of the stadium. Knocking down a wall connected it to the student block one section in the north end zone. Arner said some type of patio deck bar was second on the priority list among survey respondents 25 years old and younger. Bar areas or restaurants overlooking the field are popular at Major League Baseball stadiums where fans can relax, talk to friends, and watch the game. I hope we're tapping into how that age group really does consume sporting events. You can get the ambiance, see the video board, and also feel like you're at a social event. What was the number one priority for students? Better Wi-Fi service and connectivity, an ongoing issue when tens of thousands of people use their cell phones at once. Arner said both AT&T and Verizon have improved a distributed antenna system that helps with 4G and 5G service. These are the things we hope will provide that will help move the needle on student ticket sales. The Illini Pride Pass, which covers student admission to football and men's basketball games, is $125, or about $6 a game. Individual game tickets for students are $10. The U of I sold about 2,500 Illini Pride Passes last year, and so far about 1,300 have been sold for this season. The Block 1 section, which has been a bit sparse of late, holds about 5,000 students. But the prime sales period starts this week with students returning to campus. Most of the sales are when kids are back. The non-conference home schedule this year features two smaller schools, Akron and Eastern Michigan. But Hagemeyer said Illini fans have traditionally been more interested in Big Ten games anyway and don't buy early. We are expecting a lot of business to come in from now until those games. Illinois was the lowest ticket prices in the Big Ten, according to a DIA compilation, ranging from $20 to $80 for a Big Ten game. At Penn State, they run from $80 to $240. Yet Memorial Stadium was 56.2% full on average last year, worst in the league. Maryland was next at 64%. The Big Ten has a number of schools that regularly sell out and have fans who travel, including Nebraska and Michigan, so there may be some extra red or maize in the stands for those games. Like other schools, they also have lots of alumni in the Chicago area who can make the two-hour trip to Champaign for a game. Regardless of how many visitors show up, he he's hoping those games generate more Illini fans. The DIA is promoting an $89 family four-pack for the Nebraska game, which is a fantastic price. Fans can also get into the horseshoe area for as little as $20 during non-conference games and $35 for most Big Ten games. The only exception is Michigan, a premium game for us, when horseshoe tickets will be $65, just like sideline tickets. Other promotions this year include the return of the 1980s-era tailgate for the September 21st Nebraska game, with lucrative prizes for best barbecue and most creative tailgate. Top prize is a four-day trip to the Kentucky Derby, with tours of the racetrack and local distilleries, tickets in the grandstand and deluxe hotel accommodations. Second prize is a suite at the stadium, food and beverages included, for any remaining game this season. Third prize is a $500 shopping spree at Game Day Spirit and a Coca-Cola tailgating package. The unveiling and dedication of the new Dick Butkus statue on the east side of the stadium the day before the October 12th Michigan game. On game day, the men's and women's basketball teams will be in Grange Grove to meet with fans. Arner said the overall goal is to improve attendance and provide a great experience for people who do come. Longtime quarterback club member Todd Lindsay of Urbana said adding beer sales was a no-brainer, and bringing back tailgate for the Nebraska game should produce a good atmosphere if the Illini are competitive at that point. But he added, "I really think the general fandom around here wants to see the product on the field get better before they start getting too excited. It just always helps if they win. That's what everybody's waiting for." And from the sports page, Holy Cross transfer fills final roster spot. Coleman's future left uncertain with ads from Champaign. Brad Underwood has left no recruiting stone unturned. The Illinois men's basketball coach has gone far beyond typical high school recruitments, adding international players, graduate transfers, and junior college transfers in his first two seasons as coach. Rounding out the 2019-20 roster has seen Underwood embrace yet another recruiting tact this month after securing a commitment from Division III transfer Austin Hutchardson earlier this month. The Illini landed another transfer wing when former Holy Cross guard Jacob Grandison committed Sunday morning. Both Hutchardson and Grandison will sit out the 2019 and 20 season, and then have 2 years of eligibility remaining. "You start looking at the opportunity we have to have a guy sit out, learn your system," Underwood said in his Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk appearance in regard to Hutchardson, who has signed and he can talk about. The same sentiment, though, would hold true for Grandison. "Those guys can have a level of confidence coming in because they'll be in 110 practices," Underwood continued about sit-out transfers. "They'll experience by watching. They'll experience Big Ten basketball. They'll see the caliber of competition. Then there were coaches every single day working out as well. They don't have the pressure of a game. They don't have the stress that goes with that. Now they can work on just getting better." Grandison was a two-year starter at Holy Cross, moving into a full-time role last season after starting 18 games as a true freshman. The 6'6", 196-pound wing out of Oakland, California, averaged 13 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 assists for the Crusaders in 2018-19 and shot 36% from three-point range. While Underwood has added a transfer of every sort in his time at Illinois, he sees extra value in a sit one, play two transfer. He compared them in a way to senior guard Andreas Fellas, who had 2 years of immediate eligibility after transferring from Northwest Florida State and showed improvement even from his first semester on his second on campus. Underwood has had graduate transfers in his first two seasons with the Illini in Mark Allstork and Adonis De La Rosa. Both played a role, but neither immediately turned into a top option. The grand transfer situation, there was 125 of them last year, roughly, and they averaged 6 points a game. It gets tough for those guys to come in, especially at the highest levels, and achieve immediate success right away, learning a new system, learning new teammates, and learning a new campus. Adding transfers like Hutchinson and Grandison adds some experience to the Illinois roster. The Illini have potential to be older in 2020-2021 than any of Underwood's first three teams, including this coming season. He likes that. We just think this is a great opportunity. It helps enhance our team and gets us a little older, which is important in the Big Ten especially. It gets really hard to play 13 guys. We have 13 scholarships. I think it's a way that can be very beneficial. We can continue to work this angle a little bit. Grandison's commitment technically pushes Illinois one player past the 13 scholarship limit for the 2019-20 season, after also landing a commitment from Lincoln grad Jermaine Hamlin on Saturday. Freshman forward Bernard Kuma, however, has yet to be cleared by the NCAA Eligibility Center, a potential situation that grows increasingly unlikely, given the academic year at Illinois is scheduled to start in exactly 1 week. A full complement of scholarship players for the 2019-20 season would give Illinois two to work with for the 2020 class, with Feliz and Kipper Nichols set to graduate. That doesn't take into account any other roster turnover, which could include Ayo Dosunmu heading to the NBA. There's no doubt we're going to try to sign a couple high school guys and still have some needs. From the local page, Villa Grove man charged with sex assault, aggravated battery. From Urbana, a Villa Grove man arrested Friday for allegedly hitting and sexually assaulting a woman is expected to appear in court today. Dustin K. White, 24, who listed an address on South Pine Street, was charged Friday with criminal sexual assault and aggravated domestic battery for acts that allegedly occurred August 10th at an Urbana home. He was arrested Friday. Urbana Police Sergeant Dave Smyers said White and the woman had a dating relationship. On August 10th, they got into an argument, during which he allegedly hit her with his open hands, about the head, and with a whip on her arms and legs. He was upset with her not giving him her full attention. During the argument, he allegedly held a pillow over her face, telling her that if she was going to cry, she should cry into the pillow. He then allegedly sexually assaulted her. The woman reported what happened to her to police on August 11th and went to the hospital for treatment. Smyner said her injuries were consistent with what she had reported. Police obtained an arrest warrant Friday for White. Judge John Kennedy set bond at $250,000 and ordered White to have no contact with the woman and to wear a GPS monitoring device should he be able to post $25,000 cash to be released. If convicted of more serious criminal sexual assault charge, White faces penalties ranging from probation to 4 to 15 years in prison. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, August 19th. Please stay tuned.